Good evening, and welcome both in person and online to Blue Christmas at Little T. This service acknowledges that loss is common to the human condition. And in a season where the emphasis is on the relentless, sometimes obsessive pursuit of happiness, that emphasis can make our experience all the much more dramatic, more intense. All those images of happy, smiling faces with perfect families and homes and gifts only serve to highlight the incompleteness, imperfection, and impermanence of life as we now know it. We can feel very much out of sync with the world around us at a time like this. Grief is what we feel in response to loss, any loss, and mourning is giving meaningful expression to our grief. And only those who mourn can move forward, can begin to integrate their loss into the fabric of the person that they're becoming. We may not want to grieve or mourn at a time like this, but I've learned that grief will have its way. It doesn't need to take a vacation, and the major holidays are often landmark moments in our grief journeys. As a rule, the loss of a loved one is the most painful loss, and this year or in recent years, a number of us will have experienced just that. Because grief is a journey rather than a one-time event, our prayer is that this service this evening will be a part of your journey, a part of your mourning process. But there are many other losses and griefs where our grief may be less easy to identify and articulate. One grief I've been particularly aware of and reflecting on lately is disappointment with God. You may have had a very reasonable expectation of how your life would unfold, and yet here and now, one or maybe even many parts of your expectations, of your plan for your life, have not materialized. They've not come into being. And you find yourself wondering what God might be all about with this. And you wonder if you can actually trust God with your life. Or you've had an aspect of your faith, a construct of faith that worked well for you. It was comfortable, it was satisfying, it was safe and rich. And now, for whatever reason, it seems to have dissolved into the mist. And you are left with far more uncertainty than you would be comfortable with at this stage in your journey of faith. And you grieve the lost and broken dreams or the loss of spiritual comfort. This evening is for you as well. And our prayer again is that you will find a meaningful way to express your grief tonight and possibly find the beginning of a way forward. This evening's service is a service of lament, but lament is not simply wallowing in our grief. There's a movement to lament. Lament takes us on a journey, perhaps to someplace unexpected. Our singing may help us find a voice, so I'd ask you to stand as we sing the first verse of "Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence." You may be seated. The first movement of lament is mourning, to name our losses and how we're experiencing them. In Psalm 13, one of the classic psalms of lament, the psalmist says,
"How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death. Lest my enemies say, I have prevailed over them. Lest my foes rejoice because I am shaken."
How long will you forget me? How long must I have sorrow in my heart? How long? How long, O Lord, how long? Have you ever asked questions like that? Often our grief and sorrow go on so much longer than we or sometimes other people think is reasonable. But our opinions on the matter rarely have an impact on how the process unfolds in our lives. And so we mourn. Now, interestingly enough, the psalmist also asks, "How long shall my enemy be exalted over me?" The psalmist recognizes that there's some pretty serious alienation in his life. You know, it's a curious and a heartbreaking reality of the human condition that pain and loss often can function as some of the most alienating and isolating elements in our lives. Wounded, we often withdraw into our pain. And at the very time when we most need the consolation and support of the presence of God and others, we instead often pull back into ourselves and suffer alone. I've seen that tendency in myself. I've seen it in others. And there are a number of possible contributing factors or reasons for doing this, and some quite virtuous. But perhaps the most common is that having been wounded or disappointed, we want to protect ourselves from further hurt, and so we withdraw. Now, those reasons may have varying degrees of legitimacy or virtue, as I suggested. There may very well be necessary withdrawal from those who have caused or made worse our pain. There may very well be necessary seasons of solitude for healing and restoration. But what I have seen so often is something entirely other than that. What I have seen over and over again is the pain of loss made so much worse by the terrible pain of loneliness. It's so consistent a pattern that I've had to conclude that this is also a spiritual matter. There are malignant spiritual forces whose goal is our destruction, who intentionally make worse our patterns of isolation and alienation. And the image I have is a pretty gruesome one. It's the lions on the plains, weeding out the weak and the wounded of the herd so they can take them down a little more easily. In the same way, dark spiritual forces seek to separate us from the God and the community that love us at precisely the time we need them the most. Our thoughts can be bombarded with doubt and anger, resentment, even paranoia. The psalmist cried, "How long shall my enemies be exalted over me?" We become hyper aware of any hint of disregard or inattentiveness or unfairness on the part of others. Our defenses go up, and we withdraw. And on the other side of the story, people who very, very well may love us are terrified by the raw grief that we are showing, that we are experiencing. And in the process of steering clear of that grief, they inevitably avoid us as well. And the chasm widens as we head in opposite directions. And In those moments, we can hear that sibilant whisper, "See, you are all alone. Nobody cares. Nobody loves you." And it can seem so, so real. But I'm here tonight to tell you that in fact it is not real. It is not true. These are the deceptions of the father of lies whose goal is our destruction. The truest thing in all of this, the truest answer to the question, "God, where are you?" is that God is right in the middle of our pain and distress with us, weeping with us when we weep, participating in our suffering with us, carrying the burden with us when it would otherwise crush us. And in the tenderest and most loving way imaginable, reaching out to wipe away the tears from our eyes. Sometimes the divine presence in our distress has human skin wrapped around it. And often at times when we most desperately need it. And one of the great gifts any of us can give to those in our care is to be willing and able to step into their painful places with them and simply be with them. Loving presence to and participation in the suffering of another is a sacred and spirit-inspired opportunity for mutually healing connection. Now, sometimes, because we are still human, the divine source of these loving acts can be a little bit camouflaged, can't it? Because we are human, we will at times say and do the wrong things in those moments. Often, we don't know how to keep silent when we should, or say the words that need saying. But I implore you, if you have been the recipient of an imperfect and incomplete act of love, still receive it for what it is. A manifestation of God's relentless and unending love for you, and evidence that He is with you always. You are not alone. Please remain seated for the second verse of our carol, "Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silent." The second movement of lament is surrender. Once we've named our losses, once we've given voice to them, we now have the opportunity to surrender them into the loving hands of God. In Matthew chapter 11, Jesus extends to us the most wonderful of invitations. Jesus
said, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light."
This is an important part of mourning that isn't often addressed. We carry with us the weight of our losses and there are times when they are a burden too great for us to bear, and they will crush us. Jesus offers to do the heavy lifting for us. But in order to take him up on that offer, we have to let go of them. It doesn't mean that we no longer love it or them, is more often the case, or that we will no longer have to mourn them. It does mean that they're no longer ours to hold close and keep safe. So, we must place them in the hands of the only one who can keep them safe. We must surrender what or whom we've lost into the loving hands of God. The tighter we cling to what was but is no more, or what might have been but now never will, the harder it is to live into and embrace what is, or anticipate what might be. And then the third movement of lament is praise and thanksgiving. This is the pattern of the Psalms of Lament, and it's seen in many other places in the Bible and the life of faith. In the latter part of Psalm 13, the psalm we heard from earlier, the psalmist does exactly this. With nothing in his circumstances having changed, he declares,
"But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me."
Sometimes the darkness, the loss, the grief, the sorrow, the alienation, and the isolation can encompass us so that there seems to be nothing but dark. A darkness that feels both all-encompassing and permanent. And in those moments we can teeter on the brink of despair. The discipline of praise and thanksgiving exposes that deceit for what it is. Beauty and light are all around us. God's faithfulness and love are expressed to us in many ways right now. Right now. And we are, in fact, not alone. That discipline of praise, praising God for who God is, shifts our focus from ourselves and our distress onto God. It acknowledges God's presence with us and actively involves God in the conversation. The discipline of thanksgiving, thanking God for his faithfulness and many blessings, helps remind us that life is more, much more, than our pain and darkness. The flame of a single candle means it's no longer fully dark. So, regardless of how we feel right now, let's sing the final verse of "Let All Mortal Flesh Keep Silence." And the destination of lament, specifically Christian lament, is hope. The poem with which we opened our service was based on Psalm 23.
The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, and your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
This most familiar and beloved of Psalms articulates beautifully more than one aspect of a hope in which we can rest. We have the hope that the Good Shepherd will provide for all of our present needs, green pastures, still waters, rest. We have the hope that the Shepherd will guide and protect us through all circumstances of life, up to and including the valley of the shadow of death. And that is both the death of those we love, as well as our own death when that time comes. This is a solid, present, beautiful, and powerful hope that encompasses all the circumstances of life. The assurance that the Shepherd is both good and sufficient to all of our needs. Can we believe that? Can we hope in that? I pray that we can. But there is also a future hope. A grand table representing both provision and fellowship will be prepared for us, and tonight's service will culminate around this table as we receive a foretaste of that future feast with the bread and the wine. The psalmist concludes with the declaration that he will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You may recall that on the first Sunday of Advent, our first candle on the Advent wreath was the hope candle. When we lit that candle, we were reminded of our hope that Jesus would come again to make things right, make things new. Our future hope is the hope of resurrection, the assurance that death is not, in fact, the final word. And that hope is part of a much larger hope, which is the hope that Jesus will indeed return to set all things right and make all things new, as a renewed heaven and earth are brought together under his wise, just, and loving rule. And more fully in his presence than ever before, he will reach out and wipe away those tears one last time. This hope, at the same time profoundly personal and intimate, as well as grand, glorious, and cosmic, is represented by the flickering flame of a candle. Such is the mystery of our faith. If you are able, please stand as we sing our next carol, O Holy Night. Thank you.
Thank you. You may be seated.
And that is the journey of lament.
We move from mourning to surrender, to praise and thanksgiving, and settle into our enduring hope. It's not a one-time journey. It's a journey we will need to repeat every time our sorrow overwhelms us. Please reach out if you feel you could use some more support in this journey.
You've just listened to a podcast from Little Trinity Church in Toronto. Please check out our website at www.littletrinity.org to find out more about our ministries and services.